Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. Our program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Every day, we bring you news and information about America and the world. This is what you will hear on our program. You will hear a story from Susan Shand on the American architect Frank Lloyd Wright. Next is the health report, which discusses the skin condition eczema. Then, listen for our National Park series, which today tells about Olympic National Park in Washington State. But first, this report. It is estimated that 30% of Americans have one or more tattoos, permanent words or pictures on their skin. Nearly one in four of them want their tattoos removed, one doctor says. Dr. Paul Friedman is a spokesman for the American Society for Dermatological Surgery. He also is director of the Dermatology and Laser Surgery Center in Houston and New York. The business provides laser operations to remove tattoos. Friedman told the Associated Press that people of all age groups are seeking to remove their tattoos. He has noted an increase in millennials, people who have entered adulthood since 2000. Friedman's group estimates its members performed 85,000 tattoo removal operations in 2017. That is the most recent year for which numbers are available. Dermatologists say the latest equipment can remove most tattoos without permanently damaging the skin. But the process can be long and costly, and health insurance generally does not pay for the removals. There are three ways to remove the permanent ink writing of a tattoo. One method uses lasers, devices that produce an intense beam of light. The laser sends light of different wavelengths for each color used in the tattoo. The short but powerful light beam damages skin cells, causing the ink inside to break apart into small pieces. The body's own immune system then gets rid of the remains of the ink. An anesthetic drug is used to limit pain. Laser removal requires several treatments. The exact number depends on the size of the tattoo, and the cost can be high, from $450 to $1,000 for each treatment. Another way to remove a tattoo is called dermabrasion. That means the top layer of skin is removed by rubbing a tool against it. Dr. Eric Bernstein of the Mainline Center for Laser Surgery in the state of Pennsylvania says this method can leave big scars or marks on the skin. It also is possible to remove the skin by cutting away the top layers of skin in a medical operation. This can be done for small tattoos or to remove tattoos quickly because a person has had an allergic reaction to the ink. Bernstein is president of the American Society of Laser Medicine and Surgery. He advises people seeking to remove tattoos to wait until they are ready to do it in the right way. He warns that low-cost methods can leave permanent scars. Ryan Tucker is a 39-year-old firefighter from Texas. He spent $6,000 on 10 laser treatments to remove the tattooed name of his former wife. "I was young and stupid and thought it was a good way to show affection, which it's not," Tucker said. He added that the treatment was much less painful than the process of getting the tattoo. Bernstein also advises people to find a dermatologist who is experienced and certified in laser medical operations. He says to make sure that the doctor has the most recent lasers for tattoo removal. And he says people should ask to see pictures that show the results of treatment on people with a similar skin color. He also advises people to follow all instructions in caring for your skin after each treatment. Finally, do not try to finish the process too quickly. Waiting a few months between treatments can reduce the number needed and can reduce costs. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Frank Lloyd Wright is one of America's best-known architects. He designed private houses, religious buildings, museums, and other public structures throughout America during the 1900s. His buildings were created to be part of their natural surroundings, what he called organic architecture. Years later, his work still appears strikingly modern. Recently, the 20th century architecture of Frank Lloyd Wright was added to the list of UNESCO World Heritage Sites. UNESCO says the list contains places that are considered to have outstanding universal value to humanity. However, it is unusual for the work of a single architect to be placed on the list. I think Wright's work was unique because he was unique, said architectural historian William Richards. 8 buildings designed by Wright are some of the only 20th century pieces of architecture in the world to receive the UNESCO honor. They include the Solomon R. Guggenheim Museum in New York, a church, and a few private homes. "They're all fairly modest," Richards said, "but they had an absolute outsized influence on generations of architects who thought about how we live in our homes, how we worship." UNESCO points to the organic architecture developed by Wright. His buildings are open structures that seem to invite nature inside, while using industrial materials such as steel and concrete. There were few traditional walls and large windows. both design ideas that have become popular more recently. While many of his designs are nearly 100 years old, they still look modern. One of the structures listed by UNESCO is the Robie House in Chicago. The house was constructed in 1910. Its design places great importance on horizontal lines and is said to be influenced by the flat American plains of the area. All of the buildings on the UNESCO list were built between 1906 and 1969. I'm always struck when I see the Robie House in Chicago, architect Susan Piedmont Palladino said. She is the director of Virginia Tech's Washington Alexandria Architectural Center. When you go visit, it looks more modern than many of the buildings around it, and it's 110 years old. It wouldn't look odd with a Tesla in front of it. Then there is the Guggenheim Museum in Manhattan, an architectural icon. It was completed in 1959 and still amazes visitors with its circular design. It is considered by many to be Wright's masterpiece. In addition to the Guggenheim, UNESCO has listed the Frederick C. Robie House in Chicago, Unity Temple in Oak Park, Illinois, Taliesin in Spring Green, Wisconsin, Hollyhock House in Los Angeles, California, Falling Water in Mill Run, Pennsylvania, the Herbert and Catherine Jacobs House in Madison, Wisconsin, and Taliesin West in Scottsdale, Arizona. Richards said Wright changed the direction of architecture in America. What he gave American architecture, I think, is a series of designs that are very clearly born out of deep thinking, a concern for the landscape, something that could be defined as American, Richards said. I think that's probably his biggest statement about architecture, which is that American architecture can't possibly be about some other country's heritage. It's got to be expressly its own, he added. In 70 years of working, Wright designed 1,114 architectural works, 532 of which were built by the time he died in 1959. The American Institute of Architects considers Wright the greatest American architect of all time. Not because he gave architects something they could repeat over and over again, Richard said. He gave them a kind of an invitation to be themselves. The other U.S. architectural works on the list of World Heritage Sites are Independence Hall in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Monticello, Thomas Jefferson's home in Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm Susan Shand.
Eczema is a type of skin condition that causes itchy, red, raised areas on human skin. The condition most often affects children, but adults can also get it. No one knows what causes eczema, and there is no cure. While it is not life-threatening, Eczema can severely affect the quality of life for both those who have it and their families. Ava Seeger developed eczema shortly after she was born. She is now a teenager. Seeger says she used to wear long-sleeved shirts to hide the bumps and rashes. Her mother, Stephanie Seeger, remembers what it was like when Ava developed the condition.
We were trying to get that under control, and then all of a sudden she got these food allergies at the same time, around 18 months old.
Dr. Donald Leung says there is a link between Ava's eczema and food allergies.
Probably a third of patients with eczema develop food allergy.
Leung is an allergist and immunologist at National Jewish Health, a research hospital in Denver, Colorado. He says the link is known as atopic March. It is a series of allergic diseases beginning with eczema that progress to allergies and asthma. Leung says that eczema patients have dry, cracked skin. If children have microscopic amounts of food on their fingers, the particles can enter the body through the skin instead of through the digestive tract. Other environmental allergens, such as pollen, can enter through the skin as well.
What we need to do is rebuild the skin barrier.
Leung says patients with eczema should see a skin specialist to get control of the eczema quickly and to prevent the progression of atopic March. Research shows that a warm 20-minute bath followed by use of an ointment, a thick medicinal substance, can help rebuild the skin barrier. The ointment keeps a film of water on the skin and prevents it from evaporating. Doctors call this method the soak and seal. Covering a baby's hands can prevent them from scratching affected areas. A head cover can further protect the skin. Eczema is a troublesome skin condition. It can become so itchy that it can interrupt the sleep of both the child and the parents. The disease can affect the entire family, especially if it interferes with a parent or caregiver's ability to work. In addition, there is the emotional effect of not being able to comfort a baby. Kristen Klein's infant son has eczema. She says she can't even explain the relief that we've really gotten from treatment.
He had the cracks in the back of his legs, in his elbows. Those are almost completely healed, and we've been doing this treatment for a week.
Researchers are developing a way to test the skin to identify what weakens its natural barrier. They hope to find a way to repair such weakness before children develop what could become lifelong issues. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Today on our National Parks Journey, we explore a vast area with mountains, beaches, forests, and glaciers. The area's huge range in both rainfall and elevation make it one of the most diverse parks in America.
Welcome to Olympic National Park. The park is located in the western state of Washington. It is on the Olympic Peninsula in the northwest part of the state. The park covers more than 400,000 hectares. It has several different ecosystems. Visitors will find temperate rainforests, glacier-covered mountains, and almost 120 kilometers of wild coastline.
The Olympic Peninsula has seen travelers from many countries throughout history, including Mexico, Spain, France, Russia, and England. Many travelers from these countries arrived in the late 1700s. They were searching for the Northwest Passage. The sea route connects the Northern Atlantic and Pacific Oceans by way of the Arctic Ocean. These explorers all claimed to discover different parts of what is now Olympic National Park. In 1792, English Captain George Vancouver explored the peninsula in great detail by boat. He named many of the natural features in the area. Later, people began moving west across North America to search for gold. This era was known as the Gold Rush. Many people came to the western United States in search of gold. At the time, the Olympic Peninsula was not very developed and did not have roads. People had to travel by boat or horse to explore the peninsula.
Early settlers reached the Olympic Peninsula in the mid-1800s. At first, people built homes on the coast. This area was easier to access and had good land for farming. Life on the Olympic Peninsula was difficult, however. People lived far from large cities and resources. They cut trees to build cabins. They also hunted and fished for food. Later, people started making expeditions into the center of the peninsula. They explored its forests and mountains. These areas never became very populated, however. To protect the nature of the area, President Grover Cleveland declared the Olympic Peninsula's forests as the Olympic Forest Reserve in 1897. And in 1938, President Franklin Roosevelt signed the bill that established the Olympic National Park.
Eight Native American tribes are closely connected to the area. One tribe, the Macaw, has a long history of whaling. The U.S. bans whaling, but the Macaw tribe is permitted to continue practicing this tradition in small amounts. American courts also gave Native American tribes the right to continue their traditional fishing practices in the area. Protecting fish resources is important to the Native Americans living on the Olympic Peninsula. They work with the National Park Service to protect the area's natural resources.
Olympic National Park has meadows and lakes. It has glacier-fed rivers and mountain peaks that rise more than 2,300 meters. Each area of the park offers visitors something special. The Elwha Valley is in the central part of the park. It is the Olympic Peninsula's largest watershed. A watershed is an area of land that separates waters that flow to different rivers or seas. Long ago, the rivers in this area held the most salmon outside of Alaska. The area also was home to bears, eagles, cougars, and the Tlalum Native Americans. In the 1920s, a growing community of settlers built two hydroelectric dams to provide energy for the local economy. The dams created many problems for the river. They decreased the water in the rivers, which caused the fish population in the area to decrease. This affected the other animals that depended on fish for food. The community later decided to fix these problems. In 1992, Congress passed the Elwha River Ecosystem and Fisheries Restoration Act. Both dams have been removed, and the National Park Service is using fish hatcheries to increase the salmon population. Today, the Elwha River is the site of one of the largest ecosystem restoration projects in National Park Service history.
The Ho River is on the west side of the park. The river is formed from melted glacial ice on top of Mount Olympus. The river is 80 kilometers long. It empties into the Pacific Ocean. The area receives about 400 centimeters of rain each year. It is a temperate rainforest. Because of the amount of rain, many different types of plants grow in the Ho rainforest. From mosses and ferns to huge Sitka spruce trees, the Ho River Valley is protected from any logging or development. Hurricane Ridge is a mountain area in the northern part of the park. It is easy to enter and provides incredible views of the Olympic Mountains. The ridge has many hiking paths. In winter, people come here to ski. They also come here to take part in other fun winter activities like sledding and snowboarding. Hurricane Ridge usually has snow from December through the end of March. Visitors must be prepared for icy roads and severe weather.
The westernmost part of the park is Pacific coastline. Olympic National Park has many breathtaking beaches. Rialto Beach is known for its tall sea stacks. These formations are tall towers of rock standing in the sea. North of Rialto Beach is Hole in the Wall. It is a natural arch that has been carved by the powerful sea. Claylike Beach is known for its white sand. It also has three national wildlife refuges, which protect the area's bird and fish species. The coastline areas offer hiking and camping. They are some of the most popular places in the park.
Olympic National Park offers difficult mountain hikes. It offers relaxing beaches and exciting walks through lush rainforests. There is truly something for everyone at Olympic National Park. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Phil Dierking.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program on the Voice of America.